Hey, you.
The movie is good. Thanks, Sega. Thanks.
Greetings, Sega fans the world over. The Sega guys are back once more with more podcast action than you could shake a cyber razor cut at. Tonight, I'll be Dan, the Mega Driver 2 Mini, and my co-host is the Earthworm Jim to my alien soldier. It's James Ahsoka Holic. How you doing, buddy?
I'm not bad, mate. but a bit off of one, Jim. I'm smashing, mate. How's yourself?
Yeah, really good, mate. Really good. Just excited to talk about this. This is a special episode, isn't it, that we're doing tonight?
Yes, we were kind of given the DM by Viper and Resident SD of Radio Sega, and they asked us to do a little bit of content to celebrate the launch of the Mega Drive Mini. So by the time you watch this and listen to this, the Mega Drive Mini 2 should be on the shelves or on its way to you by mail order if you've got it from Amazon or wherever you've picked it up from. So a wee event that they're doing, and we're taking part in it by giving you our own Sega Guys flavoured take on the Mini 2.
Indeed. Either people are going to be so hyped up for the Mini by the end of this weekend, or they're going to be absolutely sick to the back teeth of it. Hopefully it's the former. But mate, brand new Sega hardware, brand new Sega console in 2022. I think it's their third, isn't it, since the Dreamcast? That's what I was thinking. You got the Mini One, the Game Gear Micro, which I'd count as one console, not five, and then now the Mini 2.
You've also had the Astro City Mini and...
Oh, of course.
And then the Vertical Mini as well.
The Astro City V.
So, although they haven't kind of had official releases over here, but they're still out there, I know.
Yeah.
Get it done.
Make it
They actually came down to, like, I think, was it £90 on Amazon? Because you order for Amazon UK and then it comes, I think it gets shipped for Japan. But £90 it came down to, and I was like... Should I? Virtua Fighter 1 Arcade Perfect, should I? And I'm like, nah, I left it, and it's back up to 130 now. So I was like, do I get that? Or do I get the Mini? And I'm thinking, I really fancy a Mega Drive 2. Even though it's a wee tiny one. But no, it's good stuff. It's nice. I think, obviously, for kind of like younger folk who... You know, and the fact that we're now getting on in years, that there's people in their 20s who, you know, have never seen Sega actually release a console before. Yeah. So for us grumpy old bastards, basically, it'll be nice whenever the door goes and there's a box with a Sega logo and something new, that new hardware smell when you open the box, you know, the newness. So I'm looking forward to it, mate.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't that long ago as well that we were talking about mini consoles, because we had the Sega Saturn Mini, which I think we both agreed that we'd probably both prefer. But I think you can't go wrong with more Sega hardware in general. But, you know, our listeners can check out that episode. It was only a few episodes ago on the Sega Radio Sega history. But yeah, I think we're both excited for this one, mate. You've pre-ordered it. I am still on the fence. But there is a lot about it that I am very, very keen on.
Well, I say I've pre-ordered it. I've pre-ordered it as a Christmas gift from my wife. So, like, she's getting me for Christmas, but she didn't pick it. It was like, so very, very kindly. I'm getting that. So, whether I get to actually play it or try it on October 28th. Now, that's the question. I might do the age-old, I need to test it to make sure it works. it's pre-orders in. It was quite strange. Whenever I first pre-ordered it, like, within a day, it went out of stock. But then, I think about 3-4 days later, it came back available to pre-order, and it's pretty much been available all the way through, and it is still available now at the time of recording. This point, by what 5th of October we're talking about, so we're still about 2 weeks almost out, or just over 2 weeks out from it actually, you know, launching, and it's still available to pre-order. It is an Amazon exclusive, so that's the only place you can get it.
Yeah.
So if people should have obviously maybe had it through by now by the time they listen to this, so I can't go pre-order it if you want it, because it'll be out by the time we listen to this. But No, I'm still available just now. So the kind of rumours that there was going to be like less made, apparently Sega were looking at, you know, cutting down, whether it was down to kind of part supplies or memory constraints or stuff like that, that it was going to be a fraction of the Mini One's availability. But so far it seems to be okay.
Yeah, I think the whole worldwide chip shortage and components and everything like that is still very much a thing, it seems. And I think that factored into what Sega was saying about creating a Mini One, because I think that's why they said that making Dreamcast and Saturn Minis would be so cost prohibitive, because manufacturing them would just be too expensive. So they've gone with a Mini Two. And I think that it's a good shout, because you look at the list of games, it's completely different to the Mini One. So if you've got the Mini One, it's almost a sequel. And the Mini One was relatively successful, wasn't it?
Aye. I mean, I've not seen it available to kind of walk in and pick up off a shelf anymore. Right. I think you can get it for, last time I checked, it was £70 unboxed in CEX. I think it's 110, 120 quid for the Mini One boxed. But I was on the Facebook Marketplace before we came on this, just to kind of get an idea of the kind of second-hand market for it. And there was like people selling unboxed ones for like 35, 40 quid on Facebook Marketplace. Now, granted, they were down in England. And I noticed that, by the way. See, in England, Facebook Marketplace is a lot cheaper. See, Scottish people, we ask for too much money. It's like, it's brutal. It's like there's like Scottish listeners like, I want 110 quid. There's one in like Bury with two controllers, 35 quid, mate. And I'm like, wow, like that's not far from my sister-in-law. I wonder if I could just drop her a wee message and say, do you fancy going to 35 quid? I was like, that's a steal. So it can be found out there if you look in the right places for a kind of decent price. And obviously it can be, you know, don't like the word hacked, but or jailbroken, to use the kind of term. And you can obviously, again, before we came on here, I had a wee look at it, and the Hack-Chi kind of mod that they've brought out, and it doesn't disrupt the interface. It actually just allows you to, I think it scans actually for metadata, and it brings in the images. Yeah. And you can choose what region of image you want to use. You can change the spine, that kind of stuff, the back cover. And then whenever you finish it and you go back into your Mini's menu, all those tiles all show up as if they were actually officially installed games. So it's a really clever mod that they've done to it. Now, whether they do that for the Mini 2, I'm sure somebody will work on it. But the advantage the Mini 2 has got is that, obviously, it does have Mega CD support out the box. So, again, there was mods to kind of trick the Mini 1 into running Mega CD games. But now we've got an official product which has Mega CD games in there. The technology is a lot more advanced than the Mini 1. The storage capacity apparently is a lot larger as well. So whether that's because there's FMV stuff on there for the Mega CD games, higher quality music, but I don't know what kind of overhead there's going to be on that storage. But it's a really impressive little piece of kit. It really is. I can't wait to get my hands on it.
Yeah, it's an absolutely stunning piece of kit. I think going back to the hacks, I've got two Minis myself. Neither of them are Sega ones. I've got a NES Mini, and I've got a PS Classic, and both of those can be modded. I've not modded my NES Mini, but I did mod, I think, as I said, on the Sega Saturn Mini episode that we did, I did mod the PS Mini, and that's very much the same. It boots up. You can actually choose to go full retro arc on it if you want to, but you can go back to the usual UI, and your games just scan into there, and you just import the images and stuff, and it's quite simple. So I hear it's quite straightforward for most of them, and I imagine if the Mega Drive Mini 2 is built off the same sort of framework, same similar software, similar design, by all accounts, the UI looks very similar to the Mini 1.
Yeah.
And that being the case, I would think that similar exports will work. I'd imagine that Sega would just look at it and thought, well, you know, the Mini 1 sold well enough that people aren't that bothered about, you know, the Mega Drive, you know, about hacking it. Your hardcore gamer is probably going to have real hardware, or they're going to have, you know, maybe a Raspberry Pi or something that they're going to be using. This is a really good piece of kit for anyone that's, you know, those lapsed Sega fans that play Sega in their youth and see this and go, oh, I'd love to play a Mega Drive again, to play some of those classic games. So I think it's quite, we're coming at this from a different kind of angle, aren't we, today, mate? Because we've both got the original hardware.
Mm-hmm.
We've both got EverDrive cartridges in our in our systems, which allows us to play pretty much all of the Mega Drive games, at least. Right. We'll put a pin in the legal side of things for now. But I think it says quite a lot that this hardware is still extremely appealing to us, even though, mm-hmm. you know, as I say, we've both got the original hardware, we've both got access to all the games. I've got quite a few different emulators that I use now and again, sometimes, you know, for recording footage and stuff. So mm-hmm. It's not one that I need, but one that I'm very, very keen on. So that's why we've put together these 10 things we love about Mini 2 and coming out from that angle. So yeah, looking forward to talking through yours and talking through my own, mate.
Yeah, I mean, the list that we've got, we actually had more than the 10 on there, you know. Yeah. That's actually what, because the premise of the kind of the pod itself, and that image you've done as well, you know, the from 10 things I hate about you to 10 things we love about the Mini 2. So I thought that was really clever. So I mean, we've got kind of 5 each, and you know, I think it's quite interesting, because I think I'm coming at it from maybe games that I've not experienced before, that I've heard about, but I don't have the facility to play them. And I think I'll give you a hint as to the kind of the angle I'll be going down. And obviously you've kind of got your own kind of takes on there as well, the 5 that you've chosen. But people might be sitting there going, well, if you've got a Mega Drive already, guys, and you've got an Everdrive cartridge, and you've got access to all the games, why are you willing to spend £105 on a wee miniature version? And I guess that's what we're going to sit here and, not that we're trying to kind of be one of these kind of people that I need to justify my purchase. it's not that at all. I think it's a case of a big element of it is the fact it's new Sega hardware, and I've always liked the kind of, I prefer the Mega Drive 1 design, but I've never had a Mega Drive 2, so this is a kind of nice wee chance to get a stripped down tiny wee version of it. But there's more to it than that, of course, which we will now get into.
Indeed, mate, indeed. And I think before we do jump into that, I think it's worth saying that if you aren't using real hardware, if you do want to go the legal route and you don't want to spend hundreds, perhaps thousands of pounds building a library like this, it's still a really attractive, it's an amazing prospect. Like, we were talking in the Sega Saturn Mini episode about the costs. We were totting it up, weren't we?
Aye,
going on.
Aye,
Panzer Dragoon Saga would be £400, Shining Force 3 would be £200. That would bring the device's total value up to £2,000. So it's
turn up at the Antiques Roadshow in 40 years. What have you got there? I've got this Sega Saturn Mini. This has Panzer Dragoon Saga on this. It's quite defined. It's
like... and the thing is, mate, it's exactly the same for this. You've got Shining Force CD, which I always thought went for £150, but I can't seem to find a listing under £900 at the moment.
What?
Which is insane.
Need one of your coffin?
Yeah, exactly. Shock. Still shocked now. I looked at it before. I thought I'd double check before the episode started. So I bumped it up to, like, you know, 400. If you say 400, put it in the middle, it's still a lot. It's still Panzer Dragoon Saga levels of rarity. And you've got Streets of Rage 3 that goes 150 at least. Shining Force 2, 200. Ranger X, 120. Robo Aleste, 100. Night Strikers on the Mega CD, that's 140. There's plenty on there that goes, just go for absolutely silly money. So if you want to do it all legally, which, you know, we're not saying advocating piracy and getting the ROMs, but if you want to get it, you know, legit versions, God, this is the way to go, isn't it? I mean, the games on it. There's 50 original games from the Mega Drive library, and 10, we say new, 10 kind of remixed or recent arcade ports. It's an astounding lineup, mate.
Aye. I mean, what you said there and touched on, I mean, obviously, if that's your preference and you've got pockets deep enough to go down that route, then, you know, power to you. You know, on you go, and fair play. It's one of these things where there's some people, a lot of people out there that still have that kind of, they would rather tangibly hold something. And obviously, yeah, Looking behind you, mate, you've got plenty to touch sitting there. Yeah. So, you know, but there's people obviously like myself who have previously in the day a Master Collection, sold it on, and now the only way to get back in is through EverDrive, through ODEs, and then obviously these mini consoles also give access to kind of games, again, that are on hardware that I don't have access to, like a Mega CD. Yeah. If I say buy a Mega CD, you're looking at about 200, 250 quid for a Mega CD one. Yeah. Right about that. That was me again going by CEX prices. If I add one of the games on here, the game that I'm literally wanting this for, and we'll get into that soon, that's another 50, 60 quid on top of that again. So the prices you mentioned, again, we're talking about adding another bit of hardware, then the cost of a game on there. So, you know, it's horses for courses. We're very blessed in the kind of modern retro age where we've got, you know, companies who are willing to bring out these mini consoles, that, you know, we've got people in the community that are bringing out these amazing mods that allow people of any budget. I mean, for the Saturn, as we've spoken about, there's ODEs for all budgets, there's EverDrives out there for all budgets, and there is a way to get your foot in the door. So we're very lucky that we've got all these options. You know, it's great. It's a great time.
It is indeed, mate. And I think the Mini 2 really is just one of those consoles that just lets you play. There's so many iconic games on here. I mentioned a few just now, but then you've got Sonic CD, for example, the original, which again is worth... Well, I know we're going to touch on a few of the games. You know, iconic games, as you say, we'll get into a few, but Truxton as well. It's on, you know, famous top-down shooter.
Not just famous for that, mate. Famous for, of course, Classic Game Room. Today we're going to review Meg's TT on the Sega Saturn.
I'd like to thank James from Glasgow for sending me Meg's TT.
Oh, what a channel, mate. What a channel, oh, honestly.
Mark, what a guy.
Come back, Mark. Come on. Give us a Classic Game Room special. Come on.
Absolutely. But yeah, I don't think we can go through all 60 because we'll be here all night.
Mate, I'd be like a six-parter.
I know.
Be sitting here with a sixth episode going, welcome to another episode of the Sega Guys. We're back again with another Mega Drive Mini 2 episode.
Yeah. Number 44. Sewer Shock.
Getting the Pro Plus and Red Bull. No, we're not going to go through all of them there. And I say that's why I think the angle that we came up, because we spoke about that before as well, mate, is that, you know, Viper has said to us that, you know, we were going to do, it didn't have to be, it's the event is to celebrate the Mega Drive Mini 2, but it could be Mega Drive themed. And you and I have done quite a bit of Mega Drive content in the past. We've celebrated the 30th birthday of the console. We've got an episode of that out there. Yeah. We've also done, you know, the 15, my favourite 15 games, which was a kind of result of me getting, obviously you sent me a Mega Drive and I got the EverDrive and explored some kind of games that I never got a chance to in the day. So we tried to think of something rather than doing the whole, well, this is game number one, game number two. It was more 10 things that we both, you know, are looking forward to about it. So it's a good angle to come at it.
Yeah, and it's not even games, not even just games. These are anything and everything, basically. Anything you can think about, we've considered it, and as you said, mate, we've got a list that's more than 10, and there might be some surprise in there. So, mate, you're the one that's got the console on pre-order. I think it's only right that you tell us the first thing that we love about the Mini 2.
Well, I've got it first on my list, right, and I could leave this one to the end just to kind of have it as the big hitter, but I'm just going to go straight in, mate, because I said 5 minutes ago that there's one game in particular that I was buying this for, and again, I alluded to it with the fact you have to have a Mega CD to play it. It's a game that I've got a lot of kind of history with, some funny stories about it as well, and it's a Final Fight CD. And I adore Final Fight, and I know it's not a Sega game, but the fact that it's on there, it's one of kind of the Mega CD games. It's legendary for that Arrange soundtrack that's on there. It's, you know, widely accepted as being possibly the best home version of the game. Visually, it's on par with the arcade. The audio is stunning, as we've just said, the Arrange soundtrack. That, for 105 quid, for me to have Final Fight CD at home, when you look at the cost of acquiring the hardware and the game, and then you add on all the other stuff on top of that, it's just a no-brainer. I mean, Final Fight, my history with Final Fight starts, here we go, tangent one. It's whenever I went to France with the school in 91, primary 7, right, and there was 3 arcade machines in the foyer. It was 1942, Ghosts and Goblins and Final Fight. And I remember it was me and one of the boys, George, were playing it. It was a disco going on. I never pulled until I was a lot older, by the way, because disco, Final Fight. Final Fight. And we were playing that, and basically we got to the very last level in the big office block, getting to fight the boss. And we came out the lift, and you know, that kind of that big long corridor with the glass windows. And basically, it was a case of that we ran out of kind of energy, and there was no credits left. And like, I'm like, what's in my pockets? I need a couple of, it was French francs at the time. I'm like, a couple of francs. And I'm like, need to get this. And I had no money. And of course, George is hammering the buttons in the arcade, and that makes the timer go down faster.
Yeah.
And at that point, I spot one of my teachers coming down the stairs, pished. So she's like, you need any help there, boys? I'm like, we need some money for the game. But he'd pressed the button too much, and the dynamite boom, that was them, they were away, and that was it. So that was the first I ever got in the arcade game, but we must have spent a small fortune getting to that stage. So that was the first time I played it, and then I had the Amiga version, because whenever I went, obviously I got back to Glasgow, I had my Amiga by that time, and you know, was had the port on there. And at the time, whenever you're younger, you kind of just accept the differences because you've got it at home, but
yeah,
it wasn't a great version. It really wasn't a great version.
Was that the version where the developer had a few screws loose and put some sort of hidden messages in the code or something, just an absolute rant
about it?
Yeah, I'm sure it was the Amiga version.
No, I need to look at this.
Find it afterwards. I'm pretty sure Guru Larry did a video when he was featuring one of his like developer rants, and he just goes insane. And the developer was saying things that he hates the game and all that sort of stuff.
Wow. But no, I love the game. I mean, the Xbox 360, Xbox Live Arcade version is brilliant as well. It's got that kind of, you know, you've got the fake arcade machine with the kind of the art, you can choose to have it full screen or 4x3, or you can add like the arcade machine, so you get the kind of the move sets, not like, yeah, with the edges peeled off as if it's a kind of age sticker, and you can put CRT filters. And I'm not sure if you can pick the arranged soundtrack in that one. I don't think it is, but again, it's a great version. But the fact that the Mega CD version is so lauded and so respected and so kind of sought after, just for that soundtrack and the kind of rep it's got as being the best playing version. For me, that's that. Whenever that announcement came out, you'll remember it for WhatsApp, mate. The announcement came out for the Mini 2, and they brought the kind of initial list of games, and Final Fight CD came up, and I messaged him, Final Fight CD with explanation marks. That was the one that jumped out at me. So that's my first one, mate. Final Fight CD.
Yeah, it's one of the biggest reasons to own it, mate. I'm lucky because I've got a copy of it. I've managed to get myself a Mega CD. I've had it for a good few years now, about 5 years. I was really lucky. I bought my Mega CD. We're going off on another tangent here. I bought my Mega CD in an eBay auction for junk Mega Drive Mega CD in the loft, no cables, untested. Got it for 50 quid for a Mega Drive and Mega CD combo. I already had the Mega Drive. Yeah, and it was a Mega. I've still got that console because it's a very first generation Mega Drive.
Wow.
Where when you boot it up, it doesn't even have the licensed and produced by Sega. It's one of those very early ones before the whole accolade legal battle. So it's a very early Mega Drive and the Mega CD too. So I had a few AC adapters, plugged it in, and it's absolutely mustard. It worked straight away. I've never had an issue with it. So I was really lit. So I got that and the Mega Drive for 50 quid. Nearly got it for nothing because Hermes, I was getting it delivered to my work, you know, hiding it from the missus. Hermes lost it. Delivered it to, I think they delivered it to Argos, it turned out, down the road from where I work. And I ended up, you know, ringing them saying it didn't come, got a refund from the seller, and all of a sudden it finally arrived. And yeah, but then I ended up paying the seller direct for out, you know, he got a refund from Homies, I think, and eBay saw none of it, which, you know, I've got a big problem with eBay at the moment, so they deserved it. But yeah, managed to get that for a decent price. And as for Final Fight on the Mega CD, I think I got that for about 20 quid.
Aye.
Because it was missing the back cover. And then I just got a reprinted back cover because it was like an incomplete one. Done with that with a few, actually. I was the other day, I was saying about Skies of Arcadia and a Dreamcast. I got that really cheap because I bought disc one and disc two separately, both in broken Dreamcast cases. But you put both the cases together and you had a whole case.
I take the front for you, the back for you, the insert for you.
That's the thing, mate.
It sounds a bit like me with this.
Yeah. It's like, that's the thing. I cannot afford to. I mean, most of this behind me that I've got is, you know, my childhood stuff, and the stuff that I really want, it's stuff that I, you know, make concessions for and get creative to save as much money as possible because I can't afford the sort of prices. And I'm pretty sure that Final Fight CD goes for about 80 quid if you want it complete. And then the Mega CD itself, you're looking at least, if you get a Mega CD 2, which I think that's probably the way to go. They're at least more reliable, although the Mega CD 1 is such a gorgeous, gorgeous system. But yeah, you're looking at least 100 quid for a Mega CD 2. You know, for that one game on the Mega Drive Mini 2, you're kind of making that up already. It is my favourite way to play it. I love it more than the Xbox Live Arcade version. I actually prefer it to the arcade version because, one, the soundtrack, and two, because the hardware limitations of the Mega CD mean that there aren't as many enemies on the screen. It doesn't get as chaotic, which I think is a bit fairer. It's not quite SNES level as bad as when there's only two enemies on screen at a time. It's
no guy.
Yeah, and no guy. But it still seems frantic enough, but not, it doesn't go, like there's some times in the arcade version when you're in like the, is it stage 5 where you're walking along the beach? And like you end up with like so many like just hounding you. It's just it turns into a proper quarter muncher then.
Even the tunnel whenever you come off the train as well before you even get to Sodom, that bit there can be quite chaotic as well. So, I never knew it was a wee bit kind of reduced in terms of enemy levels, but as you say, it's not going to be as bad as the SNES were. Like as you said, you've got you and your two opponents.
Yeah, but the Mega CD version, definitely my favourite version of it. So you it's a great pick there, mate. Great one to start with.
Boom. What about yourself, mate? What's your first one?
My first one is save states and rewind functions. So I've gone for a function of the system, and the reason why I've gone for this is because it's quite easy to do in the, you know, it's quite very user friendly. Now I've got emulators that I can do this on, but it's still nothing like using the original controller on. There's emulation is still not 100% perfect unless you go with something like Mednathan and you get all the add-ons and all that sort of stuff. And yeah, for me, I do like the idea of a save state. Now you can get save states of real hardware if you get a Mega Everdrive. I think you have to get the Pro, which in itself is, what are they, £180-£200 these days? It's either a Mega Everdrive Pro or a Mega SD, and both of those are around the £200, which is double the price of this system. Now, you do get, and I don't think they do rewind either. I think it is literally just save states on those.
Right.
So, and you and I, mate, we're both in very similar positions where we're both, you know, men of our age, young children, getting that gaming time is so sacred, so difficult sometimes. So I have something like on the Xbox Series consoles, Quick Resume is my favourite thing ever because I boot it up and the game comes up straight away and I can switch between games. But I was playing something, trying to play Grandia recently. I've been trying to play that game for years. And I was in the mine section just running around for about 45 minutes. And just in the end, just had to run all the way out again to get to the safe state because I could hear "Daddy, Daddy." So yeah. So games like Shining Force, games like Shining in the Darkness, which, you know, I love the Shining games. I talked about a lot on the Saturn mini episode, and they're fantastic games, but save states for that, save sections for those are usually in churches, and they're not always easy to get to. So playing something like that to avoid the sort of situation that I'm in Grandia, I just want to be able to save it wherever I want. Likewise, if I cock up playing something like Final Fight CD, that rewind function is a godsend. I've used it a few times on the NES Mini. It works really well on there. And just doing it on the controller would be so intuitive. On the PC, I would end up leaning over the keyboard, using the mouse, or trying to find the shortcuts. It's just sort of... So, yeah, I think that to me is one of the benefits of all these mini consoles. They've all got it, and it's just fantastic.
Right, so it's a very much a quality of life addition, yeah. You know, and it is one, I think, you know, it does take into account, you know, that kind of more hectic lifestyle, maybe Sega, and obviously, you know, Nintendo as well, with other kind of retro mini consoles, that maybe they're realizing that a lot of their audience will be people who had these as kids,
yeah,
and they're now older, so they maybe don't have the time, the disposable time to you know, sink into games like that. So, you know, I play most of my games on easy these days because I don't have time to sit and spend 40 minutes trying to beat a boss or something like that. You know, I played Power Stone 2 the other night, and I had it on like easiest way. I turned the damage up to 3 so that basically anytime I had a Wang Tang and basically had the big ball of energy, I just fired it, man. This one of them just killed somebody outright. I was like, it's like I felt like the wee guy for Goldeneye. I'm invincible.
Good old Boris. Yeah. But yeah, I think they do know their audience, mate. They know that they're either going to get your hardcore retro gamers, or you're going to get your more casual gamers who are of a certain age that played the Mega Drive when they were younger are going to be like, this is a nice little trip down memory lane. It's like we know that Karen from Ipswich doesn't have time to play her Sega Mega Drive, so she enjoys the save states. They know what they're doing. So yeah, massive, massive bonus for me.
No, and again, it's something I've never experienced using, so that's one I'm looking forward to kind of exploring as well and having a wee shot of.
Yeah, brilliant stuff, mate. So what's your second thing that you love about the Mini 2?
The second one I went for, this might sound a bit kind of weird, but again, I've only got the standard Mega Drive controller. You did send me a wee kind of third-party 6-button, but I've never used the official 6-button Mega Drive controller. And given that I absolutely love Street Fighter 2 on the Mega Drive, I'm a big fan of, you know, Pyron's work that we've spoken about before, you know, the mod work that he's done with, you know, Street Fighter 2 Remastered. And again, we've got Super Street Fighter 2 on the Mini, so to have that kind of official, and it's a shame you only get one pad, I think you get two with the first Mini, you only get one of these, but again, just actually have an official 6-button controller. Personally, that might not be a massive selling point to people listening. I go, I've got 5 of them. You know, good for you. I've got none. So, it's a very, very basic thing, but the precursor to the Saturn's controller, very similar layout, obviously. The ABC, XYZ kind of layout of it, the arched kind of layout as well, the way the buttons are laid out. I just think it'll be really nice to, again, sit down, not just to play the Mega Drive, play these games, but to have that 6-button pad on there. The precursor to the Saturn pad, as I said, so that's my next pick.
Yeah, it's a great shout, mate. You've just made me realise I have never used an officially licensed or an official 6-button Mega Drive pad, because all the ones I've got are third-party ones. Now, I do have the wireless, RetroBit ones?
Yes,
aye. And they are officially licensed, aren't they? I believe. So that's the closest I've got. Before that, I was using the same 30-part ones that I gave to you, which they're fine. And the one that I've got from Richard is really good. But yeah, it's a massive boom, because those pads, if you want the official one, they're quite expensive to get hold of online.
What is it?
Yeah, I know. Well, I never had, growing up playing Street Fighter 2, My first one was a Quick Shot control pad that I used, got with Street Fighter 2. That one lasted about a week before I rage quit against dousing through the controller at the floor and it smashed. So then, my uncle bought it for me for my birthday. I had to ring him up and apologize for being such a shit.
Uncle, I'm sorry. Mind that controller you bought me, I smashed it.
Yeah, but then I ended up with a Competition Pro one because they were like $9.99 in Argus at the time.
Who didn't have a Competition Pro? No matter what format you had, everybody at some point in the 90s got a shitty Competition Pro controller.
I know, they're everywhere. I kind of miss them. It's one of those names that was like everywhere. Like, you saw them, if you were player two around someone's house, that Competition Pro came out. It doesn't matter what you were playing, whether it was...
Remember the looks you always used to get after the person, like you're a pal coming, I'll give you a game of Sensei. They bothered me. And a draw, got this Competition Pro. You're sitting there with your official, your zip sticker, your official controller, and there you go, mate, you use that. Nah. That was always why you won as well. Like, the person that got the Competition Pro always lost because, it's no fair, you've got a better controller than me.
It's the home advantage, isn't it?
That's it. We'll get the away leg next week.
Yeah. Got to make it even. Got to go back to mine. You've got to beat me at my house. Yeah. Oh, but yeah, mate, I had Competition Pro controllers, so I didn't even have to, I didn't touch an official pad until, well, I've never touched an official pad, as I was saying. So close as I got is this Retrobit one. So another great shout there, mate, because imagine... A lot like the NES and SNES Minis, and I think the Mega Drive Mini one itself, you know, that controller is going to be pretty much spot on, you know, outrageously good build quality. And that controller is, even though I've only played third-party approximations and the officially licensed one, as you say, it's the predecessor to the Sega Saturn one, and it's absolutely astounding.
Aye. I mean, the Retrobit controllers are good. I had the Saturn one, the wireless one, and the reason why I got rid of it is because the first thing that I felt was really off on it is the D-pad was far too loose for my liking. Whenever you were pressing left and right, I didn't feel you were getting the click when you pushed it down. It didn't quite... Like, the Saturn D-pad is all... I'm not saying the Saturn D-pad is rigid, it is quite loose, but this just felt, like, almost detached. And obviously, playing Sega Rally, like, I'm always... tap, tap, tap. I'm always kind of, if you watch my replays, you always see my car's wheels are twitching because I'm always readjusting on the surface. And the Saturn's official pad, the Mark II pad, the Mark I Japanese pad, is great. The D-pad's absolutely spot on and it's brilliant for it. Whenever I've used a Retrobit one, I've really struggled with it. I didn't get that feedback going left and right, so that's why I got rid of it. And the kind of bumpers, the triggers as well on the top, they're not micro-switched. The real ones, they just click. So they are nice pads if you're looking for a wireless option. And it's great. They've got the official mold and they feel good in the hand. But as you say, mate, as good as they are, you know, Sega are going to have got this nailed on. This will be, you know, as good as they were, you know, back in the day. You're getting them made by the people who made the console. So again, another one I'm looking forward to getting my hands on.
Yeah. Did I tell you what happened to my set? Because I've still got the Sega Saturn Retrobit controller. Definitely got the same issues that you had with the rocker on the D-pad. Until one day the left clicked, it stopped working. Stopped registering left button presses. So I took it all apart and the rocker underneath had broken. That left arm had snapped off of the cross. So I harvested one of my Sega Saturn official pads for it. It's a lot better now, but it just goes to show that the build quality in them, you know, it's good, but it's not up to the original. So those Sega Saturn pads have been going for 20-odd years, 25 years over, 26 this year, and they're still going strong. That one, I had it for 6 months and that broke. A lot better now that I've swatched on the official part in it, but just goes to show, mate, the build quality of the one that will come with this would be much better.
Right, exactly. So what's your second one then, mate?
So seeing as I've already mentioned these already, I might as well jump straight into them. And it's my next 1 point, but it's 2 games, and that's Shining Force 2 and Shining Force CD. Both of them go for absolutely obscene amounts of money these days. Shining Force CD, as I just said, goes for well north of £200. Shining Force 2 goes for about £100. Now, obviously, as I said, we've got the Everdrives. I can play Shining Force 2 on the Everdrive if I like to. I am trying to make my way through Shining Force 1, but it takes time, and because of lack of save states, which I've already touched on, it's very hard going. But what really appeals to me about these is, yeah, I could play Shining Force 2, but Shining Force CD, you know, I don't have an ODE or anything like that for my Mega CD, and buying the real disc is not something that's ever going to happen at the prices, unless I, you know, I find all these gamers that find things at boot sales. I never find anything at boot sales except for FIFAs. So unless some sort of miracle happens.
Mate, all I find at boot sales is shoes and cardigans.
No, it's all I find is like board games with missing pieces and stuff. But yeah, I'm not going to get to play Shining Force 3D CD anyhow. The one thing option I was looking at was a reproduction, which I did get a very good one for Snatcher a couple of years back. So that was an option, but it's still, you know, something not quite right about that. And you always never know with reproduction CDs whether they're going to affect the laser or anything like that. So having Shining Force CD, the game that's worth, you know, many times more than the actual mini console itself, preloaded on there with save states and rewind function, again, it's another one that just feels like an absolute no-brainer for me. And I love the series so much, love the game so much. I've just never got to play those two there for cost reasons mainly. So yeah, bringing down that cost barrier, ramping up the accessibility options, just bring it on.
And again, it's a series that I've not taught. I mean, RPGs aren't a genre I tend to kind of venture into too much. I mean, I remember getting, for example, at the height of the craze in 97, whenever Final Fantasy VII came out, and like everybody had to own that game. So I got my PS1 at Christmas, and I got Tomb Raider 2, Time Crisis, and Final Fantasy VII. And like my best mate Sam, his brother David, man, this boy was obsessed with fighting. I mean, I have never seen anybody play. Like, I used to go down to Sam's, like, you walk in Sam's front door, and the first room on your right was David's room, right? You just walk by, and all you used to hear was that's all you would hear. You'd peek in at some point, you'd have Shiva flying up in there and doing all our stuff. And it was like, this boy loved that game, right? But I tried so many times, and I felt as if I always played it because it was one of those ones like kind of FOMO, like fear of missing out thing. Yeah. People talking about it in school, and well, I better play it, I better see I've got it. But I could never get into it. Jason will be sitting there probably cursing me, going, because he's a big Final Fantasy guy. But you know, it's again, RPGs, I'm quite kind of selective. I mean, I want to play Grandia now. I've got the English translation again. It's a time aspect of it.
That's the thing.
Final Fantasy, Panzer Dragoon Saga is probably the RPG that I've. In fact, it's the only RPG I've ever finished because it's only about 30 hours or something.
Less than that, you know? 20. I did a run in Panzer Dragoon Saga, and I did everything. It was 100% run, and that was getting excellent ratings on every single enemy, and it still only clocked in at about 20 hours.
There you go. So, you know, this, again, with those save states, you know, with the rewind function on there, being built in, ready to go, there is no excuse for me not to finally. I can dip my toes in, I can go a wee bit at a time, I don't need to worry. If the shout comes from upstairs, I just leave it. I can save it and move on. So, no, good shout, mate. And it's again, the kind of price aspect you touched on and those kind of save states as well. So there's no reason why I shouldn't give it a go, finally.
Absolutely, mate. Final Fantasy VII, I've been thinking about that a lot lately. We're going off another time tangent now, but I was actually winding my wife up. We both work in the same office during the day down in here. And I was whistling one of the songs. I had it in my head from when Rufus Shimra gets promoted and they have the big parade. I had it on loop. It's just going, will you stop it? But Now, I was thinking about it because I have a lot of love for Final Fantasy VII, but I keep coming up with this barrier in my head, and I'm gonna annoy everyone now, and I'm very sorry, Jason, but I don't think it's a very good game. I think it's more of a cultural phenomenon, and yes. I have a lot of nostalgia for it. I absolutely adore stuff like the music. I just think, and maybe it's the translation, but the more that you go, I go back into it and look at the story. So someone posted today, you know, name a better antagonist than Sephiroth. I thought he really isn't that much of a great protagonist because he's just basically a guy that had a hissy fit when he realized that his mother wasn't who he said it was. You know, Kefka from Final Fantasy VI is much better. But yeah, I'm still probably going to go back and play it again because I have a lot of nostalgia for it.
How can somebody say Sephiroth's a better enemy than Landy? Yeah. The guy who actually kills your dad in front of you and steals a mirror that's in your family for how long? And Sephiroth's get mummy issues and decides to have a fit.
That's it. He goes and reads a bunch of books for all day. He goes, that's it, I'm going to summon a meteor and destroy the world. And then... And I think most of the time, where you're not even fighting him, you're fighting his mum. It's Genova. It's, yeah. The more I think about it, and the thing is, you go back to it now, and you got the FMV where they're all, you know, the FMV back in the day was like, wow, look how detailed it is. And then you've got the battles which run at 15 frames per second, where the graphics are okay. And then you've got the, you know, either to call them Lego characters would be an insult to Lego. They're so blocky. Which, you know, that art style was fine, but it's just so inconsistent all the way through, and that jars with me now. And little niggly things, but yeah, I don't think it's as great as its reputation, and I think its reputation is more built on the cult, the zeitgeist that it captured at the time, that it just captured everyone. Right. And it's a defining moment, arguably the first AAA game. It's either that or Shenmue. Because of the amount of money and marketing pushed into it, like a blockbuster game. And for that, it's stuck in, you know, the consciousness of gaming. But as a game itself, and if you played Final Fantasy before, it's not quite as legendary as I think many people make it out to be. But that's my Final Fantasy tangent.
I wouldn't disagree.
It's trying to force it back.
Panzer Dragoon Saga's better. And people are just coming to realise that, you know, 24 years later after it came out. So, you
know. Finally. So, that's my second one, mate. Shall we come to your third one on your list?
Yes. So, again, a game that I'm looking forward to playing, one that I've not been able to play on the EverDrive because of the lack of hardware, because the cartridge for this Mega Drive game does require the chip that's part of the cartridge, which will probably give it away, is Virtua Racing. Now, again, I'd love to play the 32X version, but I'll happily take this Mega Drive port because as much as I've got to admire, and we've spoken about this in the past, the job that Time Warner did on the Saturn port of Virtua Racing, you know, they weren't given any source code. Sega went, there's an arcade machine. Copy it. You know, there you go, mate. Copy it. They added a lot of extra content in, but it doesn't feel like Virtua Racing. Pandemonium's Virtua Racing documentary just hit the nail on the head. And I don't know if you've watched it, he does a timer where he sees from the start line how long it takes if you just drive in a straight line to hit that wall, and it's like 6 seconds. Mega Drive version, 6 seconds. 32X version, 6 seconds. Arcade version, 6 seconds. Saturn version's like 8.6 seconds or something. It's actually out.
Yeah.
So everything about the Saturn version, and again, it's out the fact they weren't given any source code, the reason why it's like that is because they had to literally play it, copy it. Everything's done from eye and mind. But Virtua Racing, done by Sega on the Mega Drive, I'm looking forward to it. I know it's not the most visually appealing version of it, but I think it'll handle closer to the real thing than the Saturn version, because the Saturn's handling is just nothing like the arcade at all. So Virtua Racing, big one up there, second just to Final Fight CD for my gaming-wise why I'm after it.
Yeah, and it's a stunning port, mate. It's basically Daytona USA, but on the Mega Drive, whereas obviously it's not got a chance of replicating the arcade. No chance.
I'll take that.
And the frame rate, I think the frame rate's around 15 frames per second, maybe less. I think you mentioned Pandemonium's video, and even though, you know, the frame rate is much less than the arcade version, when he was looking at the splits, it was an exact fraction based on that frame rate of what the arcade would be. And it handles amazingly. What blows my mind about it is that it just retains everything content-wise. Obviously, visually, it takes a hit. There's a lot of concessions in there in terms of color and geometry and stuff. But you've still got the four viewpoints. It's got an in-car view where you see your hands on the wheel. You know, you think back to like PS2 era, Dreamcast PS2 era, all the way. I don't think, you know, getting that cockpit view became in vogue again until Forza Motorsport 3, maybe Gran Turismo 5 was the first one to bring it back. Right. In.
See the hands going.
Yeah. You didn't see that in polygonal games for decades. And this is a little Mega Drive with that sort of view. And it's I wouldn't recommend playing it that way. The hands are like right in front of the camera. They're like, you could. Can't see anything.
Get the way.
It's so impressive. It's incredibly impressive. The stuff that they did with that SVP chip. It's a shame that they didn't do more and bin the 32X off. But yeah, I've got the 32X version as well now, and that's really good. But I tend to cycle through all three, the Saturn, the 32X, and the Mega Drive version, because they've all got pros and cons, and the Mega Drive version, it's not great, you know, it's not the strongest version, but it's a piece of history, and it's just still tremendous fun to play. I think G to the Next Level is a massive fan on it. He's got some stories about how he won a virtual racing competition. So the fact that they were doing, you know, very early esports with it just goes to show how important, how good it was.
I mean, the fact that you kind of basically called it, you know, the Mega Drive's Daytona.
Yeah.
You know, so if you take everything we've said about Daytona on the Saturn, you know, it does take a hit visually, takes a hit in frame rate, but they somehow manage to capture the feel of the arcade.
Yeah.
If that's how Virtua Racing works on a Mega Drive, mate, I'll be very, very happy with that.
It basically, I mean, obviously you don't have Takanobu Mitsuyuki singing his heart out on the soundtrack, but everything else applies. You've got the full game there that plays like the arcade. It obviously takes a hit visually, but content-wise, there's parity there. It's got all the views, a few points. It's got all the tracks. The music is mostly the same as the arcade as well. Obviously, the arcade is quite limited in what music comes out of it. So, yeah, it's a massive addition to this lineup, mate. And again, it's another good one for me because my Mega Drive's got the 32X plugged in, which doesn't work with the Mega Drive version of Virtual Racing.
All right.
So if I want to play the Mega Drive version of Virtual Racing, I'll have to pull the mushroom out, take all the wires out. It's an ordeal, and I don't want to go through it.
There you go, mate. We're talking you into pre-ordering one here.
Hey, you're going to talk me into getting it, mate. No.
You'll have pre-ordered it by the time. You might even do it live on air. There we go, listeners. That's the challenge. We're going to get Dan to pre-order a Mega Drive Mini 2 on air by the time the show finishes. There we go.
It's very possible, mate. It's very possible. So we've gone through five, mate. And I think, as is our customary for our third season, I think we'll take a little musical interlude. And this is a big favourite of yours. So do you want to introduce our listeners to this one?
Yes, it's Final Fight CD's track 2. It's Slum Above Ground and Uptown Beginning. It's the very first track you hear whenever you start the game. Enjoy the electric guitar in this one.
Thank you.
So that was Slum Above Ground and Uptown Beginning from Final Fight CD. Gotta love that arranged soundtrack. You were saying, weren't we, James? It's like you can just imagine the composer, leg up, cigarette hanging out his mouth, sunglasses on while he's in the cool studio.
Aye. What do you want me to do? Aye.
It's just so cool, isn't it? You can imagine it like in a jazz club or something.
Aye, it's a do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Oh, so, so good, man.
Oh, you'll be listening to that.
If that doesn't make you pre-order it.
Indeed, mate, you're going to be listening to that a fair few times when you get your console.
Aye, we're using the rewind function just to get the bit with the guitar.
Oh, we'll have to play mine after this now.
See, there you go. Or pre-order it. We've got five games left. Come on, pre-order it. Get your phone out.
So, yeah, we've got down to our last five things we love about the mini tour. So, for me, my number three is, it's kind of a double bill of the UI and regional differences. Now, I don't think we've had confirmation of this yet. But on the Mega Drive Mini 1, you could choose your language, and if you chose, you know, Japanese or English, that would change the game. So,
all right,
Contra Hard Corps becomes Contra the Hardcore, which then gives you hit points instead of one hit kills, etc. So you get different versions of different games. So that's a massive thing on this list of games, because so many of the titles on here have got regional differences. Massive one on here, Streets of Rage 3, which we talked about recently. Did you get to the end of Streets of Rage 3 when you played it recently?
Oh, aye, mate, and didn't realise I had another floor to go on, so I wasted so many lives. Like, you know the last bit you have to save the chief?
Yeah.
So you go into the room and you blow up. There's two computers you need to blow up.
Yeah.
Right, but obviously, when the alarm's going off, there's gas and all that kind of stuff, but you get respite by going into one of the three rooms, right?
Yeah.
But I kept going in and out of the same rooms, and I'm like, I've done that. Where the fuck do I go? I'm like, alarms get off, there's smoke now. I'm like, where do I go? And it wasn't until my very last life that I remembered there was a lift at the far left-hand side of this room. And I went back up and I was like, oh no. But at that point I knew I was screwed, because, like, obviously there's one of the rooms as well that you go in and there's kind of electrical cables laid out on the floor in a pattern, and there's these kind of wee robot things that attack you, and there's sparks going in the floor, and they wiped me out. I got out of that one, smashed a couple of cans, picked up some apples, whatever it was, to get my health back, and then went into the room that the computer in it, and I got destroyed in there. And I was like, right, fine. So, but that was the English mod version of Streets of Rage 3, the Japanese version, which, as we said, Streets of Rage 3 is on it. But if they have brought that from the Mini 1 over to the 2, and you can change your language to Japanese and play Bare Knuckle 3, that's huge.
That's what I'm thinking, because there's so many games that benefit from that. I think games like Rice Star is another one where, I mean, Rice Star isn't a difficult game. You can play through that fairly easily, but I think the Japanese one, you know, has changes in. Even the sprite in Rice Star is different. You know, he's always smiling in the Japanese version, whereas in the Western version, he's got this frown on the face, so he's trying to give him more of that Sonic the Hedgehog chord of attitude.
Yes. That's what I was thinking. They've tried to go with the whole kind of more kind of attitude, you know, as opposed to being always happy.
So I think if you've got that on there, being able to play Bare Knuckle 3 is the headline. But if you've got that, you know, region selection on here, then that just opens up a lot of these games. It gives you different variations. And it was massive on the Mini 1. And I think it's fantastic if they've got it on the Mini 2. And just for general UI things, you know, as Everdrive owners, we don't have that you know, super colorful. I know we get it on with your Fenrir and your GDM. You can customize those. You can get the game colors on there. Unfortunately, you can't do that. I mean, I don't know what they'd look like on an EverDrive anyway. just with the Mega Drive's color palette. But having, you know, you've got the artwork for all of these games on there, and it looks so slick. And you've got that. You've got that Yuzo Koshiro tune going on in the background that he's making specifically for this model. You know, it's all that whole front end, it just all adds to the experience, and it just makes picking your game just that much more of a just more engaging and fun, I would say.
Aye. I mean, anyone who's got an EverDrive will know that, you know, it's pretty much just a list of games that you've got on screen. There's no any kind of airs and graces about it. And you know, obviously, if you got to the kind of Fenrir, it's very similar to an EverDrive, except you've got the ability now you can add a screenshot for each game, but it's not like a glossy JPEG. You know, if you can see that it's Sega Rally, you can see that it's Virtua Fighter 2, but it's not high quality. GDMU, I think, with Open Menu, and again, if there's anyone listening who has a GDMU and hasn't checked out Open Menu, I really recommend it. It's still evolving. If you go into Dreamcast Talk forums, there's a big thread on there. The guys that made it are on there. They're always adding kind of artwork packs as well onto it. Long story short, again, sorry to go for a tangent here, we're talking about UIs, and again, I think it's something that might benefit somebody if they hear it and they've got a GDMU and they fancy doing this, that you can change between having the Japanese or PAL or American UI. So obviously the American one was very much Sega Swirl Dreamcast. The PAL and Japanese ones were very similar, except one was blue, one was orange, but the box art was the same. Everything about it, the way it was laid out, the word Dreamcast at the bottom, the swirl, the colour, everything was the same. So you can go between that, but you can either have a lovely main image of your game cover with a description, with how many blocks of memory it uses, how many players it is, all that kind of stuff, and then a description below. Or you can have like a 9-grid with just the name of the game comes up, and then a grid of 9 games that you can scroll through. So, excuse me, that's probably the closest unofficially that you would have a glimpse at what a Dreamcast Mini UI would look like, you know. And I think what you touched on there, again, Sega doing it officially, that Koshiro music in the background, especially written, as you said, for that hardware, and just having that lovely, slick, official UI with the game cases. And, you know, it does make the choosing of a game all that more enjoyable. You know, maybe you don't own the games anymore. Oh, I used to have that. And a wee bit of nostalgia that you used to have that game in your hand when you were a kid and stuff like that. So, the UI aspect, I think, is a big thing. And again, the fact that when you can mod it, as we touched on the Mega Drive Mini 1, that you can still scan metadata and add the artwork for those games on, and you still get to keep that UI, I think that's massive.
Yeah, I think so, mate. It just adds just to the whole experience of using it, and it's all in keeping with the console itself. I know, obviously, they, you know, as you say, super glossy JPEGs, ultra clean menu and images, but it's still very much has that veneer of 90s Sega. It really, the Mini 1 was fantastic with that. I've seen the artwork that I've seen for the Mini 2. I don't think I've seen the actual the UI in action. But from what I've seen from backgrounds and everything like that, it does seem like it's going to be at least very similar. But realistically, it's probably going to be the same. So even if it's the same, that was one of the biggest things about the Mini 1, one of the most attractive things. And this one, yeah, hands down, it's one of the biggest kickers for me.
No, absolutely, mate. Again, can't wait to get my hands on it and actually use it.
So with that in mind, mate, what's your next reason for pre-ordering yours?
Number 4 is another game, and it's Night Trap, right? Now, this might be a game that has, you know, got a reputation beyond what it deserves, because obviously it was a game that obviously the US courts got all involved in. They wrongly and stupidly said it was it's a game where you're there and you're harming women and kidnapping women, and the actual premise of the game is that you have to set up the names in the game, Night Trap. You set up traps to you know, capture the invaders, and then you've got the crazy thing where, oh, it was too violent, so they've got these things where they suck the blood out them. It's like, so stupid. Like, how this get taken to the Supreme Court or something, you know? And the fact that this is a game that led to the kind of ratings coming in, you know, the you know, Sega helped bring in the kind of the video game rating system that we would now see, you know, for decades now. And I just think it's a game, again, that it's become legendary in terms of video game history, you know, just because of that whole court case and everything that it helped to kind of inspire. And, you know, I was talking to Darren, you know, Boz on Twitter, those guys all know him, and he's like, game's rotten. Would you want to play that? I'm like, it's like, mate, I just really want to play it. I think it looks like a good laugh. I don't think it's a game that ever did take itself too seriously, given the plot and the things we're talking about there. But I think the fact that just where it kind of ended up landing in the industry at that point in time, and what it kind of helped to kind of influence, I think it'd just be something. That and Sewer Shark, as a kind of aside, I think, again, Mega CD games, prices of them, along with the hardware as well, kind of makes it appealing. But it may sound like a cheesy one, but I've never played Night Trap. And after watching Console Wars and talking to Blake and Tom and Alan, we know all the kind of history with those guys in that era. I just want to play it, mate. I just think about something that I think, if you're a Sega fan and you've not played Night Trap, given the history that it's got in Sega's kind of golden era of the Genesis Mega Drive, I think just you've got to play it. So I can't wait to give it a go.
Yeah, it's can totally understand that, mate, because I've never played it. It's one that I've always wanted to play, and I've always looked into getting hands on it. But the thing is, it's just so notorious. It just carries that air of notoriety, and it's just such a, again, like you said, it's an important game. So I've never got my hands on it. The Mega CD original, even though it's one of the best-selling games on the Mega CD, I think it was even bundled with the console or the add-on for quite a while.
Aye.
Yeah, you'd see Mega CD with Night Trap, and you see the box art from there with the young lady on there. But yeah, so I think the game's quite expensive to pick up. I've never seen it for a decent price. And limited run games re-released, and of course that was exorbitantly expensive, so I didn't go for that. So it's one that's always evaded me. So that would be, I definitely want to pick that up. And I know it's not meant to be great. I know it basically, what I know about how it plays, it basically sounds like a very early version of like Five Nights at Freddy's. It's basically monitoring CCTV, and you're trying to trap the guys with Dyson vacuum cleaners, trying to.
the kind of clip that we've all seen, the three guys creeping down the stairs, and then the trap door opens, there's a puff of smoke, and the guys fall through it. It's like you took that to court.
I know, it's bonkers, isn't it? Because didn't they have the original plan was to have vampires in there, and they would actually, you know, bite. But the ladies round the neck, and you know,
but no, they've got this.
There you go, these.
Oh no!
You got basically a team of black noir from the boys coming in with a vacuum cleaner.
Black noir. They are as well, they're the absolute spit. Oh man, no, just crazy, absolutely crazy.
Yeah, you know, that game got a 15. I don't know what it's rated now, but it's got a 15 rating then, didn't it? No way does it deserve it. There's nothing in there to say that it's a 15.
Aye, it just got leapt on because it was taken so badly out of context. Like, just everything about it, they just looked at it and took it all the wrong way, and then it just became what it is. It's notorious, but it just looks like it's full of so much cheese. But I just feel that I need to play this. It's like, it's historical. It's just, I feel that, again, I didn't have the hardware at that time when that was coming out. So looking at it, as I said, after watching Console Wars and talking to Blake and stuff like that, to be able to experience it, I think it's quite important. So that's why it was one of my five.
Yeah, I'd love to play it. And yeah, again, it's another one that's got me reaching for that pre-order button on Amazon right now. Maybe before the end, I'll order one. But it's quite funny when you think of, you see the clips from that whole court case, and you got Howard, I think it's Howard Lincoln sitting there going,
"It is?
Night Trap, will never be on a Nintendo system. Fast forward 10 years, 20 years or so, and you've got it on the Nintendo Switch.
No, I mean, aye, it's just mental, mate, honestly. You see the footage of that, and it's all so serious, that court case, and like these guys literally are ripping this game to shreds, and like they're not getting. Like, watch the Sega Lord X talking about it as well, that Night Trap as well, and it's like, you know, based on complete misconceptions, and that's exactly what it is. It's like, I don't know how they've managed to look at these scenes and take from it. Maybe, I don't know, because like video gaming was still relatively not so much new, because being gamers since the 70s, this was the 90s, but you were kind of getting into an era where it was in CD-ROM and it was viewed as interactive kind of movies, maybe, and they thought that this was just too graphic to have on a game system. But madness, mate, that they ever took that to court.
Well, I think everyone took it seriously except for Sega, didn't they? Because they threw in the guy that came over to Sega from Nintendo, didn't they? And he basically just riled him up. He brought in the Super Scope with him, saying this is a weapon that Nintendo gives to children.
It's a bazooka.
Yeah.
No way. Yeah,
I think Sega are the only one seeing what it is. Just all a bit of a nonsense, really.
Aye. I mean, the fact that they already censored that. You know, that by removing the vampires. I mean, why would vampires be breaking into a house? It's like, yeah. I just, I don't know. It's one of these games that I'm going to play it and just literally push myself laughing while I'm doing it, honestly. It's just like,
that's it, mate. We don't know, and we really want to find out.
And that's why it's on the list.
That's why it's on the list.
Oh, but I mean, so which your fourth then, mate?
So my fourth. So I'm gonna kind of combine two games again here. So, but generally, my fourth is around super scaling. So the first one is another game that I really want for the Sega Mega CD. Another game I'm never going to be able to afford. And that game is Night Striker. Super scaler game, one of the few that actually takes advantage of the Mega CD's scaling hardware and does scaling properly, and it looks amazing. It's based on an arcade game and it looks just so much fun, incredible fun. You know, fighting through that futuristic city, blowing things down, amazing. But then on the other hand, you've got Space Harrier 2. Now, I'm a massive Space Harrier fan. Space Harrier,
yes, you are.
It's quintessentially Sega. The music, the premise, the gameplay, everything, absolutely adore it. Now, I do not like Space Harrier 2 on the Mega Drive. I don't know if you've ever played it, mate. Have you ever given it a try?
Very briefly. I had it on the other drive. It's just very briefly, but not a good run at it.
Yeah, my biggest problem with Space Harrier 2 on the Mega Drive is just that it's just so jerky. It's just like, I don't know what is wrong, why it's coded that way, why it performs that way. But, you know, Space Harrier 1, the port on the Sega Master System, is much smoother. And it's the same with Thunder Blade for some reason. Those very early Sega Mega Drive games from 1988 in Japan just don't run well at all. But Space Harrier 2 especially is really disappointing because, you know, it feels jerky. I think it runs at half the frame rate of, you know, most Mega Drive games. And the animation is things just, you know, you just see them very jerkily come towards you. Whereas, again, on Space Harrier on the Master System, it's a lot smoother. And while things don't scale properly, the animation between them is a lot more subtle. So it looks like they are actually scaling, but with Space Harrier 2, it doesn't. So the idea of having a Space Harrier 2 with proper scaling, you know, as we should have seen maybe on the Mega CD back in the day, is a very, very attractive proposition, because then that's kind of, you know, Space Harrier 2 is not going to be a game that delivers what a sequel to the original Space Harrier should have been, but this gets somewhere close to remedying what was a massive issue. So yeah, Night Strikers and Space Harrier 2, just super scaling in general, just two games doing proper super scaling on, you know, what would be essentially Mega CD hardware. Very attractive. We did see that enough in the Mega CD era. As Sega Lord X likes to point out, we should have seen it with games like Outrunners, Outrunners is on here, but it is the I think it's Tengen who produced the Sega Mega Drive port. Again, always runs in split screen mode. So
that's
so,
right.
So it's disappointing that, but yeah, Space Harrier 2 and Night Striker, some good old super scale and action going on the Mega Drive. That's my fourth pick.
Aye, and that's a very good one. I mean, Night Strikers, whenever I looked at it, the first thing that came to mind when I watched kind of footage of it was Bulk Slash. I don't know why. It kind of made me think of it. And just the way they that kind of futuristic city, as you said, the way it's kind of scrolling by. And also, you've got this kind of your vehicle and it's up and down and kind of shooting enemies. It did remind me a lot of kind of Bulk Slash at a glance anyway. And, you know, Space Harrier 2 speaks for itself, you know, that Mega Drive port, you said, wasn't the greatest. So to see Sega utilizing that scale of hardware in the Mini 2 to finally do it justice in the home. Another reason to pre-order, mate.
Another one, yeah. I mean, just Night Strikers, I just love, it's all of that flying car, isn't it? It kind of just turns into a Back to the Future 2 DeLorean.
See, it did give me, again, the kind of footage I watched of it, it did give me a lot of kind of Bulk Slash vibes, just the way it moves and the way the kind of city scrolled by. It did just kind of, I don't know why it did, but I just kind of instantly went, oh, kind of Bulk Slash kind of flash there in my mind. But aye, looks really, really nice as well. I love the cover art for it as well.
Yeah,
don't know, I'm a sucker for that, and I know I don't own physical games, but I'm a sucker for a nice bit of case artwork, you know. It's like, whether you go between the PAL ones, like, I'm not a great fan of like the Virtua Fighter Remix PAL cover, but I like the Japanese one because it's got that kind of more comic book style. I like the fact that something different with that. So I do like to kind of have a wee look at the kind of the case art on it. And Night Strikers has got that kind of kind of 80s, early 90s kind of sci-fi theme with the kind of, looks like there's a kind of grid effect with the green logo and stuff like that. So
I love that. I love all that sort of stuff as well. Yeah, the green logo that kind of it fades out, but with, you know, like kind of like a sort of like dot matrix sort of style.
Aye.
It's brilliant stuff. Brilliant. Yeah, it's the game. I've never played it. It just looks incredible fun. You look like you're in it, as I say, in a DeLorean that flies, and you're going through like the city from Blade Runner. You know, what more could you want? Who needs Cyberpunk 2077 when you've got games like that?
Exactly, mate. I mean, they've announced a sequel, I think, for Cyberpunk. You don't need that. You just need Night Strikers.
Exactly.
When a Mini 2.
Exactly.
It's just that.
That's it, mate. So coming down to your last thing that you love about the Mini 2, rounding out your five, what would that be?
And I'm not going for a game or a feature. I am going simply for the form factor. Again, I love retro gaming to be minimalist, and it's why I'm a big fan, cost as well obviously aside, but I'm a big fan of the whole, you know, ODs and Everdrives, because, you know, clutter is a big thing. I don't have the room, you know. I mean, I'm very fortunate that I get four shelves in the spare room to keep my consoles as it is. So and I've got a drawer with my controllers in it, so I'm lucky enough to have that. So in terms of any kind of, you know, maybe bulk of kind of cases and other things lying around, and adding another console is always a kind of question about, or, you know, where's that going to go? And I think the fact that the Mini 2 is, obviously the Mega Drive 2 is smaller than the Mega Drive 1 in terms of it went from a rectangle to a square. You know, the design did change, but the Mini 2, I mean, it was on Amazon before we came on. It's 12.8 centimetres wide. It's 3.2 centimetres tall, and it's 11.6 centimetres long. This thing is ickle. Like, I look like Gareth Bale doing love hearts here.
Didn't I send you a picture, didn't I? I said it's about the same size as this Viennese pack of Viennese swells that I've got.
Aye, it's absolutely tiny. So it's something that, again, obviously it's USB powered, so you can fire it in behind your TV. That's the kind of the good thing about it as well. It being that small, you know, you look at what you're doing now. You've got like your Now TVs and your Fire Sticks and all these kind of devices that plug in the back of your telly and kind of get. Not that I'm going to hide mine out the way. I'm going to have mine on a shelf, kind of proudly sitting there. But again, it's along the line of these kind of devices that are that small and they're kind of plug and play, that if you've got a smart telly and you've got all these apps on it, you could essentially, for all intents and purposes, have a Mega Drive built into your telly, yeah, because you could just have it plugged into a USB port in the back of your TV and out the way, and you turn it on and off you go. But no, it's insanely small. I mean, the fact that you've got an official size 6 button controller with a tiny wee box, it's got to be crazy. So again, when it comes to kind of saving space and kind of having that kind of ease of just finding somewhere to put it and use it, I just think it's absolutely crazy that they've managed to shrink down that level of technology, that they've went more advanced again. It's got more storage. Obviously, we know storage has got ridiculously small. You get like micro SD cards for 10 or 56 gig and stupid numbers like that. But I think the fact that they've kind of been so true to the design, like you look at the kind of adverts for it on YouTube on the official Sega channels, is introducing the Mega Drive Mini 2. It's like, and they spin it round, and you don't realise that obviously they're zooming in. You're still thinking in your mind you're looking at a full size console, but it's actually this tiny wee box that they've got. So I remember we've seen the video that Sega did when they announced it, and they had one of the guys on stage with the packaging, you know, for the Japanese version, and even the packaging's tiny. You know, it's like, I just think it's going to be one of these things that, a bit like the Series S, like, I don't think everybody realised how small, that like, everybody went, oh, Series S is X amount percent smaller than Series X, and they did the thing in the promo where they showed the S sliding into the kind of frame of the X to try to emphasise how small it was, but it wasn't until you flipped that lid up and went, holy shit, this thing's so small.
Yeah.
I think the Mini 2 is going to be like that. I think whenever you flip that lid open, you move the controller out the way, and you dig in and you actually pick up this wee tiny box wrapped in plastic. You paid £105 for that. So aye, form factor, mate, I guess it's a big thing. Just especially for me personally. So I just think it's amazing I've packed in that kind of tech into such a tiny wee device.
I want to see a Mega Drive 2 Mini, but the Mega Drive Mini 2 is actual Mega Drive 2 size, but the controller is the same size by comparison. But no, mate, it's a massive thing about it, because I keep thinking in my head, as I say, I've got a Mega Drive and a Mega CD. If I want to move that, I've got to unhook it all from, you know, the current setup. And the biggest pain in the ass with the Mega CD is that it's got its own power supply. And of course, it's not just you know, the figure eight cable with a plug coming out. It's obviously the great big AC adapter, and in the Mega Drive's got the great big AC adapter. And you need two of those big bad boys to fit in the plugs. And the AC adapters are so thick that they won't even sit next to each other. You've got to space them out. So you got that, and it's like, you know, you're going to lug this big console and both of these huge plugs about if you want to play it in a different room. It's just not going to fly, is it? So if you could play it in your normal setup, and then where you pick it up, slip it in your pocket or something, and as you say, take it into your front room, USB into the USB slot in the telly, there away you go. You can play it somewhere else. Got friends over for dinner, they don't have to come to the console, you just bring that to them. You want to play a bit of Street Fighter 2? Want to play a bit of Final Fight? There you go.
I mean, I don't know if you ever remember whenever Steve Jobs unveiled the iPod Nano.
No,
I used to be a massive Apple fanboy. I used to rush home from work to watch all the keynotes and all that kind of stuff, right, whenever Steve Jobs was alive. But when he unveiled the iPod Nano, now in your denims, you've got your main pocket, right? Yeah. And you've got that stupid wee pocket that nobody knows what it's for, right? Well, he actually had the camera zoomed right in on his hip. And he says, you know, so we had 1,000 songs in our pocket, and we always had an iPod right here, in this pocket right here, didn't we? He goes, you ever wonder what this pocket's for? And he points to that, and he puts his finger and thumb in, and on screen, he actually pulls out the iPod, the first iPod Nano, and the crowd's going, oh! Because, like, but the iPod Nano was, again, at that time, you went from using the big iPod with the giant shuffle wheel on it to this, obviously, ridiculously small and thin and very, very easily to scratch, by the way, from experience. So if you were sliding in and out of that pocket, Mr. Jobs, it wasn't coming out without any scratches. But I think that kind of, it's that level of, like, it's how small? It's like, you know, it's just mad. So again, when I seen these kind of measurements, all that made me think back to that keynote, the fact that, you know, you're saying there, again, we've all done it. We've got our setup upstairs. Sometimes, you know, maybe you might decide to sit downstairs a bit later. People go to bed, and again, you're humping a Dreamcast and a Saturn and a Mega Drive downstairs, or an OG Xbox with a Duke.
Just reversing out the room with my Xbox in my hand.
So it's like you get to that aspect that you don't have the cabling to worry about. You don't have any of the kind of bulk. You can just take this tiny wee box with its controller, with a USB cable, and go from room to room. So the convenience of that is massive.
Yeah, it really is, mate. I mean, there was an example that I had the other day. Is the missus was working on the weekend down in the office, so I couldn't come down and play my retro games. And then my youngest was in the living room. And she was playing Slime Rancher 2 on a Series X, which she can't play on her own Xbox. So she was at the living room. So I thought, I'll go and play on the Series S then. I couldn't play the Series S because she was signed into my bloody account to play Slime Rancher. So went to play the Switch, and my middle daughter had taken that and scurried off with it. So I had to find something else to do. But if I had a Mini 2, could have just grabbed that, plugged that in, and wouldn't have lost that little slot of gaming time. So, yeah, it's a massive selling reason, mate. Just so impressive that they've managed to squeeze all that into this tiny, almost credit card size little device. It's amazing.
Right. You think if you could have taken this back, like, because I've mentioned on this podcast as well before that my first kind of, you know, one of my earlier memories of actually playing a Mega Drive was a Mega Drive 2. It was Sam's cousin Ronnie who had it with 2 6-button controllers, and obviously it had Street Fighter 2 Champion Edition, and only had a very, very brief shot of it. And I also remember there was a school friend who had a Mega Drive 2, and it was the Aladdin pack. And I always remember the box for that, again, that bundle, that lovely kind of Disney themed with the picture of the Mega Drive on the front with the Aladdin stuff around the bottom. So it's just kind of great to think that you could go back and maybe show yourself back then. Well, see, in 30 years' time, it's going to be this size. But you would lose your mind if you could go back and actually show yourself what they've managed to do. The way technology's went is crazy. Obviously we're kind of old enough that we've seen most of the advances. Crazy.
It is, mate. So my last one then kind of feeds on the back of yours, and that I've got in here: HD output, filters, and settings. Now, for me, I've got my stuff all hooked up to a CRT, which is nice. I do love having a CRT. It means that I can play Lightcon games. You know, transparencies and stuff are kind of the way that developers always intended. There's just a lot to like about playing it for a CRT, but there are times when I do want to try and play it on a display. Whether it's just because, you know, as I say, about changing rooms if I've got the mini console, or if I want to capture something, if I want to capture some footage, it's easier to just plug into a HDMI recorder rather than going through, right, well, I've got an RCA lead, or have I got a SCART lead, and I'll plug that in there, and, you know, it just becomes a bit of a nightmare. And then, of course, you know, if you want to get a SCART, if you want to get a HDMI adapter, they can get, if you want a good one, they can get quite expensive, can't they? So buying a decent HDMI adapter for the Mega Drive, probably not something that I'd do out of the gate just for the Mega Drive itself. But, you know, with all the other benefits that we've got, all the games, you know, you've got the 60 games, all the the compactness of it all, how portable it is, the UI, all these other little lovely accoutrements. Couple about that with the fact that it just plugs into any HD setting, and yeah, that's a massive selling point for me. Maybe not for others who have already got HD solutions for their consoles, but for me personally, having a little device like that that you can just plug into any modern display and have it display exactly as it's supposed to, you know the UUI 1080p, the games correctly, you know, correct aspect. I think you can stretch them, you can do like pixel perfect and stuff, but they do mostly display, the default setting is that they display it 4x3 without a border, or you can have a choice of borders for how you display it. I think there's some scanline options on there, so having all that in addition to having the console itself, I think that's a massive selling point for me.
That's actually a really good point, mate. I mean, we've talked about cost, right? We've talked about the cost of buying the hardware, buying a mega CD, buying these games, right?
Yeah.
But that is an absolutely brilliant point, because, again, that the fact that you're going to get, you know, an output 1080p, you know, proper razor sharp, you're not going to have to worry about going to buy an OSSC or any of the kind of expensive cabling options to get that pristine picture. So again, you're getting that out the box. Frog in my throat there, guys, sorry. But I mean, for example, I mean, I don't have a CRT, I'm looking for one. Maybe a smaller one. He says, why play Virtua Cop, basically. What's that? But, you know, I've got various, and I have used various solutions for HDMI. Going back to when I first kind of obviously got the Mega Drive off you, I've got a SCART to HDMI adapter. And I know, like, Retro RGB, and he's done all these kind of videos, and he's this piece of junk, you know, and they actually held that up, and I'm sitting going, oh my God, man, I use that. He's like, this introduces 5 frames of lag, and I'm like, well, I don't feel 5 frames. When I press jumps on, it jumps, but, I mean, these guys have got all the kind of tools not to measure these things, so that's fine, but there's budgets for cables for everybody, you know. I mean, I've used the Hyperkin cable on my Sega Saturn. I've had two of those reliability issues. Sound went on one picture, went on another, loose cabling. I've had it open. I've tested the solder joints on it. I just don't know what's wrong with it. So I've finally bit the bullet and I've ordered a Rad 2X. They're available to pre-order. It cost me £65.
Yeah, right? That's the thing, yeah.
You know, and I don't doubt the quality of it. It's highly regarded. It's got the RetroTINK technology in there. You know, various people in the community that we speak to have got them, swear by them. The smoothing options meant to be absolutely fantastic. But £65 is more than half the price of a...
Yeah.
Now, obviously, we're talking about the Saturn cable, but there is a Mega Drive version for the Mega Drive 2 with an adapter cable to make it work on the 1. And that's also £65 delivered. Yeah. So, you know, it's half the price of the Mini 2. So, you know, it's a great point, mate. Absolutely brilliant.
So many of these cables are so expensive. And as you say, there's cables for every budget. But most of the time, you're looking at least, what, £20 for a cable that, yeah, as you say, Retro RGB, you'll probably just say, don't use this. It's a pile of rubbish. So, and as you say, you're looking at £50 upwards to get a decent one, whether it's, you know, Kaiko make decent-ish ones, don't they?
They're excellent. I mean, they're about £35-40. I've got two. I've got the Kaiko for my Dreamcast, and I've got one for the original Xbox. And Jason Madison hooked me up with the Xbox one for an excellent price. Good man. But they go for about £35-40, the Kaiko ones. Now, again, they're excellent, but it's still leaning towards, I mean, £35-40 for a cable.
Yeah.
It's a lot of money. You know, we're talking about cost of living crisis and that kind of thing. And again, that's another, I mean, that could have been 1 or 10 cost of living crisis. You know, it's like, if you want to kind of game, retro game on a kind of budget, I suppose this is ideal for that kind of thing. But get back to the cables. I mean, as I said, the Hyperkin cable cost me 30. You know, HDMI to SCART or SCART to HDMI was like 15. So, and I'm not going to one of these people who will go on social media or go on YouTube or Twitter or whatever and chastise somebody for that. See, if you buy a cabling solution and you hook it up to your telly and you like it and you can play those games and you're happy with them, power to you. there's too many people, I think, that sort of kind of shit on people's choice. Like, I remember ages ago, I took a photograph of my screen of Power Stone, and somebody replied to me and said, and I quote, "You need to spend," and it was a guy with like 54, it wasn't one of the big accounts. I'm not having a kind of thinly veiled dig at any of the kind of big creators or anything. This was just a random guy, 50 odd followers, that just kind of came out of nowhere and said, "To get a decent picture out of the Dreamcast, you need to spend at least £200. And I thought, well, that's nonsense. You know, but this is somebody who obviously had an OSSC and had all the best of gear and was obviously one the absolute pinnacle of picture quality. But if you've picked up a 20 quid lead and you're happy with the picture, you're happy with the sound, it feels responsive and you're enjoying it, batter in, enjoy it. Nobody's going to say it, you know. But it is a great kind of point you've made, because it's something we never factored in. We've talked about the hardware cost, we've talked about the software cost, but the cost of getting it from there to a modern telly.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. If you've got the original hardware, cabling it up to a modern telly is it's not cheap. But yeah, I mean, the package itself is, we're talking what, it's £105, yeah. So on one hand, £105. You got your Sega Mega Drive 2 Mini, 60 games, and there's a fair few of these games which will take upwards of 40 hours to get through. Shining Force CD, Shining Force 2, Shining in the Darkness, and Phantasy Star 2, all going to take upwards of 40 hours. There's a lot of game time in there, not to mention your arcade classics. For a five or less, you could pre-order the pack for Modern Warfare 2. To get the additional content with it. $99.99 for Modern Warfare 2. That's one game that you'll need a console to play that on, and you'll need, you know, probably an Xbox Live or PlayStation Plus subscription to play it online. In terms of value, this thing is outstanding, and I know these are games from, you know, 25-30 years ago, but not all of them are, because some of them are brand new. But yeah, when you start factoring stuff in, like the cost of the games in the secondhand market these days, the cost of what cabling would cost to connect to the TV, you know, it starts looking like just such an attractive proposition that, I'm talking myself into getting that pre-ordering.
Mon, we're not far from wrapping up here, folks. Is Dan going to pre-order one before the show ends? I mean, Just to kind of, I'm not going to cover all the games, but I'm just going to quickly, I've got the list of games here. So just to kind of wrap up kind of the kind of section here, obviously we've got Afterburner 2, Alien Soldier, Atomic Runner, Bonanza Brothers, Clay Fighter, Crusader of Sentry, Desert Strike, Earthworm Jim 2, Echo the Dolphin, Echo the Tides of Time, Elemental Master, Fatal Fury 2, Final Fight CD, Gain Ground, Golden Axe 2, Granada, Hellfire, Herzog's Vi, Midnight Resistance. What a game that is. I love that in the Amiga. It's also in Robocop 2, by the way. It's a machine that never pushes Duffy, it falls over. Officer yeah, Duffy, have a seat. Poof. Night Striker, Night Trap, Outrun, Outrunners, Phantasy Star 2, Populous, Rainbow Islands Extra, Ranger X, what a game. Rise Star, Robo Alest, Rolling Thunder 2, Sewer Shark, Shadow Dancer, Shining Force CD, Shining Force 2, as we've touched on, Shining in the Darkness, Silpede, Sonic 3D Flicky's Island, Sonic the Hedgehog CD, oh, Toot Toot Sonic Warriors. That's an odd one. See if they've got the ability to change. Because I love the Japanese soundtrack. You can do anything in there. Oh my god, what a tune! Splatterhouse 2, Streets of Rage 3, Super Hang On, Super Street Fighter 2, The Ninja Warriors, The Ooze, The Revenge of Shinobi, Shining Force 4, Toe Jam and Earl, Panic on Funkatron, Truxton. We've got a great game here, Victor Man 2. We'll finish this off like Mark Viewpoint, Virtua Racing, War Song, You Many Mystery Mansion, and thank you to Richard from Sheffield for sending us that copy. bonus games, Devian Pie, Fantasy Zone, Space Harrier 2, Spatter, Star Mobile, Super Locomotive, and Puyo Puyo Sun. So, I mean, there's not many games there. I mean, I might not have played them all, but I have heard of them all. I've certainly seen footage of, I mean, that is a hell. I mean, some folk on Twitter earlier were kind of saying, oh, the lineup's not that great. And,
it's,
you know,
it's astounding.
That's a great, that is a great lineup for 105 quid. The amount of gameplay in there is unbelievable.
Yeah. And you, the fact that they haven't copied any games over from the Mega Drive Mini 1, you know,
yes,
you've got Mini 1, this is pretty much essential. I mean, there, I would have loved some of the stuff that's on the Japanese launch, so on the Japanese version. So the two Lunar games are on there,
yeah.
two more RPGs. So I would have loved to have something like that on here. And yeah, Shin Megami Tensei, another great one that's Japan only. And of course, the biggest hole in there is, of course, Snatcher.
Yes.
And that is a crying shame because that is hands down one of my favorite games of that entire generation. I only got to play it for the first time a few years back, and it did not disappoint. It's absolutely amazing. But, you know, that's just a handful of games out of a list of 60 games of just unbelievable quality. I mean, mate, I think it's a must have.
Well, I mean, you touched on Snatcher, and that's the big one. That's the big Mega CD one that I think everyone was looking for. But there was also kind of talk, obviously, it did come out in the Saturn a couple of years later, but it was only in Japan. And there was talk of, you know, are they going to do a fan translation? And I think the kind of consensus as to why the fan mod community is not touching Snatcher on the Saturn is because there is a Mega CD port.
Yeah.
Or a Mega CD version, not a port, but you know, it's. I think it's a case of they looked at it as, well, it's a lot of time to spend translating something when there already is, like Shining Force 3, Scenario 2 and 3, Dragon Force 2, Grandia. These are all games that only came out in Japan and never came out in any English form, but you know, Snatcher does exist on the Mega CD in English and was released in the West, so I think that's why the fan community is not touching it. But for that reason, I'm shocked that it's not on the Mini 2, but it does have native Mega CD compatibility, so maybe later. The Sega guys are unendorsed piracy.
I think on that note then, mate, our 10 things that we love about the Mini 2, there they are. Do you agree with them? What games are you interested in for the Mega Drive Mini 2? Are there any that you wish that were on there? Are you getting a Mini 2? Well, if you're listening to this, you may have missed your chance because the pre-orders may have all gone. But we'd love to hear from you. You can reach out to me at swooper_D. You can reach out to James at the Segaholic. You can catch the account at Sega Guys. Until next time, stay retro, stay Sega. We will see you on the Sega side.
Sega!